It is part of the human condition that's been around since ancient times. The ancient word acedia has said to come in and out of our vocabulary over time. Monks in isolation struggled with it, and Hawaii resident Kathleen Norris learned more about it after living near a monastery in the Dakotas years ago. She wrote a book about the condition that made it on the New York Times bestseller list. The book was entitled Acedia and Me, A Marriage, Monks, and a Writer's Life. During our recent isolation triggered by this health crisis, someone saw the parallels and flagged it as a way to explain what some of us may be feeling.
Well, I had a shock about a week ago when a friend was saying, is anybody else feeling this kind of mental restlessness and anger and boredom? And then someone I don't even know had posted a photograph of the cover of my book on called Acedia. And I was so surprised to see it there, but I thought, of course, because we're not used to being isolated. We're used to being busy and working and going places. And all of a sudden, having to slow down, having to stay at home, not having so much to do, this thing called acedia is likely to strike. And it's an ancient word. It's never really translated. It has no exact English translation, but it's basically a nasty combination of restlessness and boredom coming in all at once, and often some anger with it. And I think, you know, all of us will experience it at some time in our lives when you're really bored and you're restless, and anything you think of to do, you think, I don't want to do that. I mean, it's that sort of just, it's a nasty condition. But I think right now we're sort of we've opened ourselves up to it because we can't do our normal things. We can't have our normal distractions. We're kind of forced to live with ourselves.
It's a kind of unsettledness. It's somewhere between the blues and being melancholy.
Yeah, the blues, the blahs, you know. But it's that combination of both restlessness and boredom, where everything I think of that I could do, I think, no, that's too boring. But I need to do something. What am I going to do? And it's a thing that is hardest, I think, for me. And it's an ancient word. I don't know. It first comes into play kind of in the 4th century when the Christian church had suddenly become legal. It had been persecuted up till then. And all of a sudden it was legal. It began to get political power and great wealth. And there were a bunch of men and women in the Middle East who, I think, decided they didn't want to be a part of a rich and powerful place. They wanted something deeper, more spiritual. I guess nowadays we would call it going off the grid. They kind of went into the deserts, which were considered a terrible wilderness. Nobody would want to live in the wilderness like the desert. And they formed little communities of hermits that might get together once a week together and stuff. And they created a way of being out there and left us with a number of wonderful sayings. It's an oral literature that has passed down. But one of the things they did, they realized that while they had left the cities and sometimes positions of power behind, they hadn't left themselves behind, and they were still dealing with emotions like anger and desires like greed. And acedia was one of the most evil ones that really attacked them and tried to convince them their life wasn't worth anything, that they were just wasting their time. They really used that word a lot. It was a very important word for them.
So it's almost like a touch of depression.
It can be. I mean, I think traditionally the classic definition of it, the best definition actually comes from the 4th century. And this monk describes, named Evagrius, he describes it coming, sadness trails along behind it. It's like, as if you're kind of imagining, well, gee, I wish things used to be the way they, you know, you have this image of the past was better than this, even if it wasn't, you kind of stick to that nostalgia. So sadness kind of trails along with it. It always seems to accompany acedia eventually, but it's the boredom and restlessness and anger that really hit first. It's not exactly clinical depression, but it can make you depressed.
So how did you come to know acedia?
Well, I found just through kind of life circumstances, I ended up knowing a lot of Benedictine monks and nuns, and I was in a library in a monastery one day, and one of the monks had I'd been reading a bunch of these early sayings of the desert fathers and mothers. There were women out there, too. And one monk knew I was really interested. He said, oh, look at this book by Evagrius, you know, you'll like it. And so I picked it up, and all of a sudden I found his definition of acedia, and I said, oh, my God, I've experienced this ever since I was a teenager, but I never knew what to call it. And it was like this, a life-changing experience. you know, and here's a guy, he was writing the 1700 years ago, but all of a sudden he became my boyfriend. That's like, wow, I like this guy. And so he is a really interesting writer. But that's really what got me on the trail. And then being fascinated how the word has come and gone. In the plagues of the 14th century in Europe, it was used, commonly used, and then it faded out of existence. And then in the early 20th century, in the Oxford English Dictionary, you know, which traces the usage of words, the word was marked as obsolete, and after World War II, it was back in. So we needed it again. And that fascinated me, too. So I started doing research on it and collecting everything I could find and ended up writing a book.
You ended up living next to this monastery, correct?
Yeah. St. John's in Minnesota has a place called the Collegeville Institute where you have an apartment. And you can live there with your husband or your children. It's on the monastery grounds. And, you know, it's a university, so they have a library. And you can pray. You can go to prayers with the monks if you want to. I've been there several times now. It's a great place for me to write, and I have a lot of friends there now. And so I got sort of interested in their life as well. With my friend who said that he was suffering from this sort of mental blocks and everything, I said, you know, acedia is a lot like a virus. It is opportunistic, and this is a great opportunity for it to strike us because we're out of whack. Things are not normal. And we don't know when they will be. So we're vulnerable now, just like we would be to a virus. We're vulnerable to acedia.
So how do you shake acedia?
Well, you reject it actively, you know, and you can't do that with real depression. I mean, clinical depression, you can't just reject it or snap out of it. But with acedia, with myself, when I feel it coming on, I say, no, I don't want to go there. I'm not going there. And I find prayer helps, reading Thomas Merton, who certainly dealt with acedia like every monk does, just doing other things, sometimes watching a good film. Like right now, if I'm streaming a really good film on the Criterion Network or something, I'll do something that might help me defeat that sense of hopelessness. I'm walking every morning in Makiki, climbing lots of hills for the sake of my Okole, and, you know, that helps. Physical exercise helps. And I interviewed some people when I wrote the book. I interviewed an abbot of a fairly large monastery, and I said, what do you do when people come to you and they say they are suffering from this? And he said, well, every monk in the world is going to suffer from it just because the daily routine can seem so awful and oppressive. And first of all, I try to figure out if it's clinical depression. And in that case, I'll send them to a doctor. But if it's just garden variety acedia, I will try to get them sort of, what he said, out of the prison of themselves and their own thoughts. And I might assign them, if they don't do physical work, I might assign them to do some physical work, gardening or some physical work that will just take them out of their routine enough, maybe jolt them out of it. And he said it also helps for them to know that every other person there has experienced this at some time or another.
Now, I just recently learned of walking meditation. And so I'm just wondering, as all of us are walking more because of our situation, is there something that you can work on to make sure you don't fall into this acedia trap?
Well, I think walking just helps. I mean, it's physical exercise. You're exercising your body. And I've always found as a writer, if I have writer's block or I'm stuck on something, I'll go for a walk because somehow just the pace of walking will jostle my mind or something. There's walking has all sorts of benefits and I think it loosens me mentally. Like if I ever get back to my gym, if they've ever reopened again, when I use the bike or the elliptical trainer, I never listen to anything else. I want my mind to just wander, and I think the physical movement helps my mind as well. Walking meditation is wonderful. I've done that actually with Buddhist monks, and I think I know some Christian monks who use that practice as well.
So it's not just being in the moment when you're walking.
It can be. You know, like one of the joys that I have found in Makiki, I'm discovering all kinds of little garden spots and flowers and trees that I'd never noticed before. And that's been really fun. And again, trying to be attentive to what's around you and not just distracted by your own thoughts, and then sometimes going deeper into your own thoughts. And, you know, I solve problems when I'm walking. And sometimes even when I'm on the bicycle at the gym, my mind starts to wander and I think, oh, Maybe that would be a good idea.
Well, thank you for sharing your knowledge about this and helping us to understand what some of us might be feeling out there.
Yeah, and it's an odd word. Unless you're into monastic studies or medieval literature, chances are you wouldn't encounter it. And that's one reason I wrote the book. It actually became a bestseller, which I thought was hilarious. But, I never expected that. But it was interesting. And it was published the day Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, which was really interesting.
And so now you've written multiple books. So you've got a variety of themes going, right? I mean,
yeah, I've written about the Dakotas where my parents were from and where I lived in their house, actually, my mom's house for a long time. I grew up in Hawaii, but mm-hmm. And then I wrote a book about Benedictines because they're really interesting people, and most people don't know much about them. They have weird stereotypes of monks and nuns, but, and so I was just writing stories about them.
Right, and so, but that was that your first experience when you were there in the Dakotas?
Yeah, because there were two monasteries, one of men and one of women, that were only 90 miles away, and out there in the western Dakotas, that's a neighbor.
That's
close.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
There's no traffic. You can you can go anytime. And so discovering them was like, being adopted by this huge family, and it's worldwide.
Well, you never know where life is going to lead you, right?
Oh, yeah. I never. And I was raised, when I was in high school, my family went to Church of the Crossroads. I was sort of raised generic Protestant stuff, and I never knew anything about monastic people until they became my good friends.
Do you think you have a touch of acedia? We were just talking to Hawaii author and poet Kathleen Norris, who has written a number of books, including a New York Times bestseller entitled Acedia and Me, A Marriage, Monks, and a Writer's Life.